Welcome back. I'm so excited to be able to talk to Johnny again, and I'm so excited. I've scheduled a shower for this weekend, whether I need it or not. Once a month, I try to get a shower, and I'm going to send my hair out for servicing as well. I'm doing everything I can. I've got my Trump for Morons copy. I turned my autographed picture of Donald Trump toward the wall because I don't want to be disgusted when I'm talking to my friend. Anyway, hello, John. John, who is taking more medications, well, he's taking enough medication to sustain the Iranian army. I've never seen more pill bottles. He sent a photo out. Anyway.
Yes, I did. By the way, that was not music that you played earlier. What was it? It sounded like somebody was falling down a hill. What was playing? What did you play?
That was the third hour introduction music. I don't know. That's what they
Well, it was
play.
Not. I can guarantee you it wasn't music. But I did post. It's the Dirty Dozen bottle of heart medications. I never complain or talk about things that go wrong in my life or whatever, but I thought this was rather important because about 3.5 months ago, I got so tired. I was hoping that I had COVID because when I got that tired about 4 or 5 years ago, it was COVID and I was over it in about 10 days. I cure very, very quickly. Anyway, I went to the hospital and they had diagnosed me with heart failure and that my heart was beating half as slowly as it should be beating. And there were four male cardiologists who took EKGs of me and sonics of me and all kinds of stuff, and they couldn't find the problem. And they called them as young.
So, John, you were down to the 40 beats a minute club, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. And do they know how long this was going on, my friend? Any ideas how long this was going on? Or did it just show up?
No, you know, I have fired five of my primary physicians for incompetence. And I just fired the last one a month ago because any idiot with a stethoscope could put it on my chest and realize there's something, there are heartbeats that are missing, okay?
Yeah, I gotcha.
Any event, they called in an advisor. She's probably 23 years of age, gorgeous Korean cardiologist who does heart transplants. And she said, I said to her, you know, my son's a brother-in-law who's in his 60s since he was 17 is wearing a pacemaker. He's doing fine. I said, so could I have a pacemaker? And she said, no. And I said, why not? She said, if I cut you, you'll die. That's how blunt she was. I said, what do you mean?
That's blunt.
Yeah, she said, the arteries around your heart would not sustain a cut. Okay? So she said, the only thing that I can do for you, she said, is I can recommend some heart medications. You take those heart medications for a while, then we'll take another look at you and maybe evaluate what we could do. So she gives me the Dirty Dozen heart medications, which I have to take morning and night. So I took a picture of them to show people.
Oh, that was a whopper.
There are hundreds of my friends out there who are on pills, endless pills, and now they find out that their Johnny is on a dozen of these pills. So anyway, I go to the, and then I found a fantastic new primary doctor on the recommendation of this wonderful Korean cardiologist. I went in to see him.
Her business card says, if I cut you, you'll die. This is incredible.
Good God. I mean, thank God she was that blunt. You know, I can handle the truth. I'm going to talk a lot of truth to you and your audience tonight.
That's why
I'm thrilled about doing the show. Now, I'm not a teacher, but I must tell you, your audience is going to learn so much tonight that they never even knew existed. So that's why I'm thrilled that I'm being with you, and we're starting off in a very weird way. Anyway, yes. I went to see my new primary physician, mm-hmm. and he put a stethoscope on me.
Yeah.
And then he took it off, and then he put it back, and he just said, unbelievable. And I said, what? He says, that sounds like the most normal heart I ever heard. So 3 days after that, I go to see my beautiful Korean cardiologist. She's equally as stunned. And so I said, well, since I'm doing so much better, can I have the pacemaker? And she said, you don't need it. I said, what do you mean I don't need it? She said, for whatever reason, those heart medications that you're taking a dozen morning and dozen night are doing whatever it is that they're supposed to do for you, and it is almost unbelievable. I must tell you, I have never felt better physically or intellectually. I've never felt more ambitious, or I've never felt this good. Now, she said to me, you know, the weather is not that good, but if you get a chance, go out and play your usual 9 holes of golf every day.
Oh, good news. She said that.
So now,
that's great.
Listen, yeah. This is the hottest day of the year. You know how hot it is, Jeff?
No, it's 110.
So all the witnesses are making phone calls.
All right. And that's hot.
The cement walkways in my neighborhood are so hot. Neighbors are walking around in stilts. So, but anyway, I went to the golf course this morning. It's 100 degrees, and I tried to work up a sweat, and I couldn't because it just kept evaporating. I couldn't work up a sweat.
That's cute. I can't believe what I'm hearing. I'm stunned.
Okay.
I'm shocked.
So, I run home, and I jump into my water bed, which I fill with ice cubes. So there you go. Uh-huh. Anyway,
Did you play the 9 holes? Wait. Did you play the 9?
No, but I'm going to play tomorrow. My son's coming up,
and
he plays from the very tips of the golf course. He should be on the tour. He's so good. But I will stick it out. So there's nobody on the golf course. It is just too monumentally hot. Anyway,
they should have little misty mist showers at every hole, every tee, where you could just mist yourself and then drive.
Well, That would be great. In any event, you know that every once in a while, I love to write something in verse because it helps me get away from the Donald Trump curse.
Well said.
So we're going to start off this one with a very, very short poem, and then I have dozens of things to talk about, so here we start. A short, heartbreaking poem. The truth of which is hard to be attacked, since it is filled with, truthfully, nothing but fact. I fought for decades and decades to become a citizen of the USA, a democracy that was absolutely staunchly one of a kind. When I look at the country now, though, and especially at its so-called laughable leaders, that democracy has become harder than Jimmy Hoffa to find.
Yeah.
Is it because of the murders of JFK, Martin Luther King et al., we become hard to understand fully? The only thing that seems to be crystal clear now about this once magnificent land is that we've been reduced to becoming just Benjamin Netanyahu's bully.
Isn't that the truth? Wow.
It is. Listen, I must tell you, I am my biggest fan. Nobody writes like that. And I don't even know where it comes from.
That's an enormous truth, John. That's a brutal truth. And
okay. So I'm going to give you a little more truth. Okay. When you see the president, you know, I never call him president. I only call him Trump.
I don't either. That's
never,
same here.
Ever
same here.
Him.
Never.
As president, it's always just Trump.
That's
anyway,
worthy of.
when a president sits in the Oval Office, you see very obviously the history he is sitting under. He's sitting under a picture of Thomas Paine, Jefferson, Eisenhower, maybe even John Kennedy. That's what presidents sit under. You know what Donald Trump sits under?
I don't.
A fucking baseball cap.
Makes perfect sense. He's running so many hustles to make money, selling this, selling that. This is an obscenity, what's going on there.
Well, it was totally predictable. I predicted it years ago. Yes, I called it years ago, and I will call it even now. I'll tell you one thing about, you know, I don't care about Iran. Let me tell you something. It's a good thing Iran is not Palestine, because they're never going to take over Iran. And, of course, Netanyahu and Trump and Biden are war criminals for the genocide that they are committing on the Palestinians. The one thing that I worry about Trump taking over, though, is the Kennedy Center. And you know why? Do you know why he took over the Kennedy Center?
No.
You don't?
No. I'm not up on this.
He went to the Kennedy Center one night, and it was a homosexual play. He was so offended, he took over the Kennedy Center, vowing there would never, ever be another homosexual play in that building.
Yeah. Somehow now, it's a Trump vignette I've missed.
So let me tell you how pathetically he is deranged about homosexuals. Now, the reason that I am concerned about what happened at the Kennedy Center is the truth is a lot of creative people, including the writers and directors and performers in Hollywood, do not like to disrupt or bother the guy sitting in the White House, and the guy sitting in the White House is also the guy that's running the Kennedy Center. Now, does that mean that those brilliant talents in Los Angeles and Hollywood, about 30% of whom are homosexuals, I wonder if that will discourage them from making some of the great films that they make. Now, to me, one of the funniest films ever made, and it was about homosexuals, was Birdcage with Robin Williams.
Missed it. Didn't see it.
Oh, my God, it's hilarious. Mm-hmm. And the other wonderful movie with Robin Williams, again, that comic genius, where he played a Scottish woman babysitter.
Oh, yeah, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
They are absolutely brilliant works of entertaining art. And
that's
they're
true.
About homosexuals, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, I had a friend who is one of the best writers I ever ran across, a woman. She lives in Serbia. She went down. We lost our friendship when she stupidly went down the Trump rabbit hole. I don't know if you recall when
that
Trump...
That is still not repaired? She's still doing that?
Oh, it's gotten worse. Well, the thing is that when he gave his State of the Union speech, or his expected speech when he took over the Oval Office, he said there are only two sexes in the world, male and female. And she applauded that wholeheartedly because Serbia is one of the few countries that announces that homosexuals or trans are not welcome in their country. They actually advertise, right? So we parted company immediately after
that. I remember when that happened. I figured it had somehow it had healed up, but it hasn't. All right.
No, it has.
They go down with a ship. Many of them. They just will not.
Oh my God! They absolutely certainly do. He announced, after the business with. I want to talk just a little bit about just a tiny little bit about Iran. Do you recall in 1950? That a socialist professor named Mossadegh was elected wholeheartedly, democratically, to take over as president of Iran. The year was 1950. The first thing he does, he looks at the contracts he has with British oil and American oil. And he discovers they're getting 80% of his country's oil. And he decides, oh, no. We're going to get 80% of our own oil. You guys can have 20%. And guess what Eisenhower said? Oh, no, you're not. And he sent the CIA to murder him. That's what we do to these countries. I'm having a couple of arguments with some very close friends who should know better. And it's about Israel. I'm going to read something to you that almost nobody has ever heard of. And one of the reasons that I heard of it is because I became the biographer and storyteller for Jim Garrison to talk about and do documentaries about the murder of John Kennedy. Right. This information was passed on to me, and I've had it in my closet for a long, long time. I have never, ever, ever seen it on the internet. Now, I'll tell you about one argument I have. Most of my friends who are Trumpaholics are trashing me for not siding with the Israelis. And my comment to them was, listen, England and France and the United States had no business giving half of Palestine to the Jews. What they should have gotten was half of Germany. It was the Germans who built the ovens and put 6 million other human beings into those ovens, not just Jews, but homosexuals and others. And they said, oh, no, because Jews had occupied that land for 5,000 years. And I said, you haven't the fucking foggiest idea what you're talking about. No Jew was in Israel until Moses left Egypt as a slave 5,000 years ago and was welcomed by the Palestinians who made the Moses and the fleeing Jews comfortable there. And
John, hold on. I want to say something here. John Barber works in a business that is largely the province of many Jewish Americans and Jewish talented writers, actors, and so forth. For him to stand on his truth, which happens to be my basic truth as well, and many of yours, shows more strength of character than I can honestly say I can find in anybody else. To stand up in his own world of show business with people who are not going to take kindly to what he is saying and do this takes more strength, inner character, and integrity than I can even measure. I've been stunned at what you've done, and I really salute you for standing on your truth 100%.
Well,
that takes a lot of guts.
I appreciate that, but it seems to me the truth is very obvious, so there's no reason to be trying to change it or ignore it. Now, here's the truth about something that John Kennedy said years and years ago, before he was murdered. You have never seen it in the New York Times, owned by Jews, Wall Street Journal, owned by Jews. You've never seen it anywhere. Mm. And what it is a prediction that he makes, and he's sorry for it. And this is what it is. Here's a magnificent picture of John Kennedy, and it's in orange and brown print. And he said, one day after I am long gone, you will remember me and say, we should have stopped the nuclear program of Israel, abolished the Federal Reserve, and kicked all secret societies of cultists, usurpers, and Zionists out of our wonderful country to keep it that way. But it's never too late. Just remember that. John Kennedy.
I've not seen that quote. That is a monumental quote. I have not seen that. Thank you for sharing that.
That's right. And you know, before they murdered him, he had APAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, up in front of the courts to be registered as a foreign lobby, which they are. And, of course, after he was shot, the vice president who became the president, LBJ, whoever it was, never touched a Jew again in his life.
Oh, no. And no, LBJ was as rotten as they get, period. I don't look, Dimona was the reason, probably without, in my view, the reason that he was murdered. He fought Ben-Gurion. He said, you will be inspected by the IAEA or whoever the organization was back then. We don't want you to have the bomb. We're going to inspect. He says, no, you're not. They stole so much plutonium from us to build their initial bombs. And now look at them. The Samson option threatening to nuke everybody if they face an existential threat. Go.
Here's something else that you should know, and I recommend this to all of my friends. If you really want to know anything about Israel, the one human being in the world who had more to do with building the state of Israel into a recognizable country was a writer. He was a screenwriter. He was known as the Shakespeare of movies. You know what I'm talking about?
Ben Hecht.
I'm talking about Ben Hecht. His book is called A Child of the Century. Now, I was 17 years of age. I was in the country illegally. I'm working at Paramount Studios. There was a company called Hecht Hill Lancaster, with Burt Lancaster and Hecht and somebody named Hill, and they made movies. Mm-hmm. I was in the little coffee shop, and they had the paperback edition of The Child of the Century by Ben Hecht. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought this Ben Hecht was one of the partners in Hecht Hill Lancaster's. So being a 17-year-old anxious to learn everything about the movies and who makes them, I bought the book. The first sentence, I couldn't put the book down. Guess what the first sentence was?
No, I couldn't tell you. Go ahead.
I have often thought about writing a book about myself. Isn't that what? I don't know anybody on the planet who hasn't thought of doing it.
That's funny. I couldn't put it down.
I spent 10 days. I lived in a shabby little apartment. I sat at a table with a plastic tablecloth, and it was a fold-up chair. I was poor as a church mouse. I could not put that book down. It was the only fan letter I ever wrote. Now, I'm 17, so I grabbed myself legal paper. It's, you know, that long stuff that's yellow and lined.
11 by 17 lined legal pad.
Yeah, that's it, because I don't have any other kind of paper around. I have a pencil. I don't even have a pen. And my first sentence to him was, I am so sorry, Mr. Hecht, that I accidentally picked up your book to read. Now, who would want to look at that for a first sentence? And then I added, because unless they find something that's unpublished, by Mark Twain, you have absolutely ruined my reading for the rest of my life. Now, you know, if I think of that, I'm 17, and that's brilliant writing, but I didn't even know I could do that.
Yeah,
so,
that's great. He kept that letter. I'll bet he never let that letter get off his desk, or at least from in his desk.
He kept it the rest of his life because 10 days later, I got a 10-page handwritten note from him. Now, I don't know where to send it, so I sent it to the publisher of A Child of the Century who forwarded it. He sent me back a note saying, I'm on my way to Laguna Beach to do a play called Winkelberg, and I would love to have you as an assistant if you can get away from the mailroom. So I left the mailroom for 10 days and was Ben Heck's assistant. Now, so what I am saying is he played the major role in getting Israel built as a state, because he was so famous in America as a screenwriter and a personality, a half a dozen of the Durgun and those active political Jews who wanted a state begged him to come on board with them to turn Israel into a state. It's one of the most heartbreaking, moving stories I ever read. He succeeded. But once he succeeded, he quit being a Jew and quit being allied with the state of Israel. Because Ben-Gurion, who became the first prime minister, had made a deal with the British. That he, if they stuck with the British, he would become the first prime minister. Well, Ben Heck knew that the British were worse than the Nazis, and he wanted to build a state totally independent of England and Great Britain. He bought a ship. It was called the Ben Heck. He found 1,000 young Jewish volunteers from around the world to get on the Ben Heck, sail into Tel Aviv Harbor, and attack Ben-Gurion to get rid of him so that they could get rid of England and build a real Jewish state. However, Ben-Gurion had better arms and musicians than Ben Heck in his small boat. He blew up the boat, killing 1,000 fellow Jews.
He killed them all. Wow.
He killed them all, and it's in the Ben-Gurion Museum. They have put the guns in there to worship, because that's one of the reasons the state exists. Okay, so
what an extraordinary piece of history, John. We did learn a lot just then. Thank you. Wow.
Okay, so the book is called The Child of the Century. It is the best book that I have ever written outside of something written by Mark Twain. And it's about movies. Yeah. It's about the newspaper business in this country. It's it's just a fabulous, fabulous read. Please get it. It's called A Child of the Century. You'll never want to buy another book the rest of your life. Now I want to tell you something really demented about Donald Trump. Well, you can't help it. He is, I'll tell you, how pathetically deranged he is about homosexuals.
The man is absolutely deranged from A to Z. He's nuts.
Yeah,
I don't
know.
He's crazy.
Listen,
go ahead.
There is proof of this. I mean, maybe a lot of his picadillos you don't know about, because he might keep, well, I was going to say he might keep them to himself, but he can't keep anything to himself.
Yeah, he runs his mouth nonstop.
Anyway, okay, so what does August the 6th, 1945, mean to you?
I don't think that's the day you turned Cary Grant down for lunch.
No. August the 6th, 1945, was the day that Truman and the United States dropped an unnecessary atomic bomb on Hiroshima.
Oh, yeah. Completely unnecessary. Both of them.
Shortly thereafter, with one on Nagasaki, but Truman said he wasn't really dropping it on Nagasaki. He was dropping it on Moscow to warn the Russians. I mean, that's how pathetic they are. But now get a load of this. What was the name of the plane that dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima?
Enola Gay.
That's right. And guess what Donald Trump did? He deleted the name Enola Gay from all of America's history military records.
Enola Gay has been stricken? That was the pilot's mother.
Not only has it been stricken from the records.
Psychopath, Trump.
He searched the generals and the officers, thousands of them, to find out those who had the last name Gay and deleted them.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What limits does this man's lunacy have? I haven't seen any yet. You know what the plane that dropped the second bomb was? Go ahead.
Well, listen, it's not Donald Trump that's unbelievable. It's those who like him.
You can't reach them, John. They're unreachable. They're locked. They're locked in. They won't step out. There's a rumor that some of the ever-Trumpers are beginning to question him now. Well, what will it take, for God's sakes? They have 100 reasons to question the guy. He's nuts.
Now, there were so many things that I did want to talk to you about. One of them is last night, this is a story that's one of the most interesting in the world to me. And it was discovered by a guy named Wayne Madsen, who is America's greatest living investigative reporter. When John Kennedy Jr. was alive and had his George magazine, 3 months before he was murdered in his private plane, he interviewed Wayne and two other leading investigative journalists. He was going to hire them to be researchers into the murder of his father because he wanted to turn George magazine into an East Coast version of Rampart's magazine. Right. And once it became established and credible, he was going to run for the Senate. And eventually that would have led him to the White House. Of course, he was murdered. And nobody knows more about the murder of John Kennedy Jr. than Donald Jeffries, who thankfully is on your show every Monday.
Yeah, thanks to you for introducing us. Donald's a great guest. Yeah.
Okay. Now, this story revolves around there is a document, and the reason I'm bringing it up tonight on HBO, there's an hour and a half documentary about the daughter of Jane Mansfield, who was 3 years of age when she was in the car that was crushed and murdered and killed her mother. And I said murdered because she was murdered. And Wayne
Marissa Hargitay, right? Is that it?
Yes. Okay. So she sadly knows absolutely nothing about her mother. Jane Mansfield. So I'm going to tell you a story about Jane Mansfield you are going to find almost impossible to believe. She was the best friend of Dorothy Kilgallen.
Oh, yeah.
Now, before Dorothy Kilgallen became a famous panelist on What's My Line, she was one of the best crime reporters in America.
She was excellent. Don't get any better.
And when she became a celebrity, she never gave it up. And what should pop up while she's now the celebrity star? In the background and in her heart, she's still a crime reporter. Mm-hmm. And the greatest murder ever committed in this country is the murder of John Kennedy. And the only one left around who could talk about it was Jack Ruby. So she arranges to have an interview with Jack Ruby. Nobody asked for an interview with Jack Ruby. Nobody with the Warren Commission, nobody with the New York Times, nobody with the Washington Post, only Dorothy Kilgallen. And when she was finished with it, she wrote a pamphlet she never let out of her hand, gave it to her assistant, and she said, "This pamphlet, I'm going to shake up and change the world with this pamphlet." Now, Dorothy Kilgallen loved sex, and she loved men, but she was not attractive. So one of the guys she dated was this homosexual singer, Johnny Ray. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, Johnny Ray. The little white cloud that cried.
Yes, that's it, Johnny Ray. So they were an item. That's the only guy that would sleep with her, okay? And he was gay.
Oh, my.
But Jane Mansfield was her best friend. And Dorothy would have her stay at the house all the time. Because when Jane came and stayed at the house, there were a dozen guys who would come and visit her. And, of course, once in a while, Dorothy
she'd get lucky.
she would get lucky. You're absolutely right. Anyway, after she goes around for weeks talking about how this pamphlet is going to shake up that case and solve the murder, a guy appears in her life who is younger and handsome. I think he's from Pittsburgh or something. His name was Ron Pataki.
Yep.
Shortly after that, she's found dead. Ron Pataki is found missing back in Pittsburgh, and her assistant is found dead, and both pamphlets are missing. She had an extra pamphlet, and guess who had it?
Oh, my. Jane. Oh, my.
That's right. And she said to Jane, "I have been in contact with Jim Garrison in New Orleans. So if anything ever happens to me, you have this extra pamphlet and you take it to her." She was on her way to New Orleans to see Jim Garrison to deliver that pamphlet. And the one who discovered how she was murdered, you should have on your show, is this Wayne Madsen.
I had Wayne on the program 25 years ago or something like that.
You get him back to tell this story. But if you see a picture of that absolutely crushed convertible, nobody could have survived that.
Well, I've seen it.
Okay.
I've seen it.
Everybody
I've seen
has
pictures.
Seen it.
Yeah.
Now, but what had happened is the car was driving and it was on its way to New Orleans. And in front of it was a huge truck.
And behind it
was another smaller truck that covered the convertible with smoke. It blew smoke over it. So
that's where the cloud came from. Ah, okay.
That's where the cloud came from, so the driver could not see. And ran into the truck and killed again. When the police showed up, the valise, the briefcase containing Dorothy Kilgallen's script for Jim Garrison, was missing. The whole total story is told brilliantly in a long article by Wayne Madsen. That's where the story comes from.
Yeah, I'd like to get Wayne on. That's a must. That's a really big, important picture. It's a very big piece of the puzzle when you think about it.
Oh, absolutely no question about it. Yeah. I mean, there's so much going on that is so interesting. Well, it's scary and interesting.
It's the way it is, John. It's not scary. It's dangerous. It's dangerous. That's what we're talking about here. It's dangerous to look into this stuff.
Well, the truth is, it is very dangerous to look into this stuff. It is. But you know what happens? It is thrilling when you uncover these stories that are truthful about people who are trying to make a difference in the world and are shot down and gunned down at every turn. You know,
they kill people all the time, my friend. They kill people without remorse. They kill them because they're in the way. They just take them out.
Do you know who the most popular American was in 1950 when I came to this country? The two most popular Americans. Number one, Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Joe DiMaggio. Now, I can imagine the baseball hero still being one of America. I can't imagine America ever appointing one of the great intellectuals as one of the most interesting Americans in the world.
America was different then.
God, it was. Yeah. You're kidding. When I was interviewing Garrison, and I asked him why he thought he could take on the federal government since he was an independent. And he said two things. He said, John, I guess as a kid I saw one too many Frank Capra movies. And then he said, the other thing is, I guess I thought I was still living in the country I was born in. Well, I became a citizen in this country in 1977 after years and years of being deported and fighting to become a citizen of this country. Finally got my citizenship papers in 1977, handed to me by Senator John Tunney. And do you remember the, I guess he called it the Gucci girl, Charo, who used to be with
Charo, Xavier Cugat's sex object.
In the basement of Scandia was a wine cellar in the dining room, and there were a dozen and a half people down there, movie producers and movie stars and politicians to help me celebrate becoming an American citizen. And Cheryl got up and sang the national anthem for me.
Charo. Charo had a thick Cuban accent, I guess it was. And I met her once, and she came up with that coochie and put her arm around me. She was a character. What a strange, odd, unusual character, but very smart lady, not dumb.
She was unbelievably smart, unbelievably talented, and played a classic guitar as good as anyone on the planet.
That's true.
So she was a very close friend of Sarita's and mine for a long time. She absolutely adored Sarita.
Just briefly. Hello, Sarita. We all think about you, and I hope you're doing at least a little better, at least stable.
Well, Sarita is absolutely and totally indestructible. I don't think personally I could handle what she's going through without not wanting to off myself. I hate to say that. She was one of the greatest tap dancers in the country, one of the greatest singers, one of the most beautiful women that I ever saw. And she came down with this strange edema. She used to wear a size 5, size 5.5 shoe when she modeled them. Now she wears a size 11. But I took her the other day to Macy's, and I spent 2 hours finding the greatest shoes for her. And she is so grateful. And she has this fantastic sense of humor about it. And I don't know where it comes from. I don't believe in God. And a lot of my friends tell me, you should believe in God, because first of all, look who God gave you to marry, for God's sake. Who else would put up with you?
There's a point.
Mm-hmm. But I do believe in divine intervention. So that may sound paradoxical to you, but if you recall moments in my book, there are at least a dozen and a half of them, where people would come out of nowhere and into my life for either months or a few years and improve it beyond belief.
Yeah, it's divine intervention, John. I agree, 100%. That's right. It's there. It happens.
Yeah.
The universe is stranger than we can imagine, the way it works.
Well, and the other thing, I played with guys half my age.
Yeah.
Who aren't physically or mentally as active as I am.
I believe you. No question.
I do not know where it comes from. But
well,
I have
whatever
warned.
It is, if you could bottle it, that'd be great. I'd take some. By the way, does Sarita have to keep her feet up, her legs up?
Oh, yeah. When she sleeps at night, she lies flat and elevates.
Did you see the thing I sent you you put it under the back of your knees and it keeps your legs up while you sleep?
Yes, I saw, but she does better than that. She sleeps flat, but has pillows pile up under her feet.
All right, well, whatever. It's the same idea.
Yeah. So, but I must tell you, I don't know how I got so lucky. And even when I look back at how miserable my life was when I was 6 to 17, it doesn't look miserable at all. It looks like it was all part of the plan, and it all turned out well.
Now give yourself some credit, and let's go with divine intervention for Sarita being in your life. That's fine. That works. That's great. What you've achieved, I mean, think about it. Just think about it, what you achieved. It's astonishing. And as you read that book and you go through it and you see that you're not a victim, you'll never think like a victim, but you have every right to. You were given some really foul things to deal with. And I just marveled at how you overcame them.
There's nobody who's a bigger pain in the ass than somebody who talks about being a victim. I was never, ever a victim. Nope. It was something that inspired me to move further and further ahead. There was something else I wanted to talk to you about, and I just can't quite remember it offhand. But I am so glad that I have you once a month to come and talk to.
Because it's a wonderful visit.
It's just a joy talking to you.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me all right?
You're fine. No, you're fine.
Oh, okay, because I was going to have to try to get a landline.
You're fine.
This phone is fine. Okay, well, anyway.
And don't forget this, John, and everyone, John knows this as well as anybody. Even in life, if you fall on your face, you're still moving forward.
That's true. That's true.
So keep moving forward. Hey, I'm so glad to hear that somehow, well, I'm not a big believer in medications, but whatever. You got your back on track, and the little, if I cut you, you die, told you to go play golf, that's phenomenal. That's great. Well, in 100-degree weather? Jeez.
Well, the thing is, all my life, I have cured very quickly, no matter what happened to me.
Yeah.
Broken arms, broken jaw, broken stuff all over from hockey and stuff like that, and I heal almost immediately.
You sound 100% on your game. Perfect.
I have never felt really sick a day in my life.
That's incredible. Well, there's a lot about attitude, about worldview, life view. There's a lot going on within you that, that propels that. And then we can always stir in a little divine intervention, too. Well, I'll go with that.
Okay, well, again, thank you so very much. And
okay, John, Sarita, we'll see you next month, I hope. And
yes,
Sarita?
You'll see me next month, and Sarita sends her love. She just loves the fact I do your show.
Well, she's a special one. Thank you, dear. I appreciate you, too. Okay, Johnny, have a good night. Enjoy the golf. Okay.
Thanks.
Good night. All right, the one and only John Barber. He sounds terrific. What a gift. What a gift. All right, that's the end of our week. What a way to end it. We will be back on here. I appreciate you, too. Okay, Johnny, have a good night. Enjoy the golf. Okay.
Thanks.
Good night. All right, the one and only John Barber. He sounds terrific. What a gift. What a gift. All right, that's the end of our week. What a way to end it. We will be back